Chapter 7. Long Clay. The stillness was unexpectedly broken. The distant sound of a gun reverberated through the air, apparently from the direction of the county town. Bejiggered. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the stranger who had sung the song, jumping up. What does that mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked several. A prisoner escaped from the jail, that's what it means. Apostrophe, apostrophe, all listened. The sound was repeated, and none of them spoke, but the man in the chimney corner, who said quietly, I've often been told that in this county they fire a gun at such times, but I never heard it till now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I wonder if it is my man? Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured the personage in cinder gray. Surely it is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the shepherd involuntarily. And surely we've seen him. That little man who looked in at the door by now, and quivered like a leaf when he seen me, and heard your song. Apostrophe, apostrophe, his teeth chattered, and the breath went out of his body, apostrophe, said the dairyman. And his heart seemed to sink within him like a stone, apostrophe, said Oliver Giles. And he bolted, as if he'd been shot at, apostrophe, said the hedge carpenter. True, his teeth chattered, and his heart seemed to sink, and he bolted, as if he'd been shot at, apostrophe, slowly summed up the man in the chimney corner. I didn't notice it, apostrophe, remarked the hangman. We were all a-wondering what made him run off in such a fright, apostrophe, faltered one of the women against the wall, and now 'tis explained. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the firing of the alarm gun went on at intervals, low and sullenly, and their suspicions became a certainty. The sinister gentleman in cinder gray roused himself. Is there a constable here? Apostrophe, he asked, in thick tones. If so, let him step forward. Apostrophe, the engaged man of 50 stepped quavering out from the wall, his betrothed beginning to sob on the back of the chair. You are a sworn constable? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I be, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then pursue the criminal at once, with assistance, and bring him back here. He can't have gone far. Apostrophe, I will, sir, I will when I've got my staff. I'll go home and get it, and come sharp here, and start in a body. Apostrophe, apostrophe, staff. Never mind your staff. The man'll be gone. Apostrophe, but I can't do nothing without my staff, can I, William, and John, and Charles Jake? No, for there's the King's Royal Crown a-painted on en in yaller and gold, and the lion and the unicorn, so as when I raise en up and hit my prisoner, 'tis made a lawful blow thereby. I wouldn't tempt to take up a man without my staff, no, not one. If I hadn't the law to guy me courage, why, instead o' my taking up him, he might take up me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, I'm a king's man myself, and can give you authority enough for this, apostrophe, said the formidable officer in gray. Now then, all of ye, be ready. Have ye any lanterns? Apostrophe, yes, have ye any lanterns? I demand it. Apostrophe, said the constable. And the rest of ye able-bodied, apostrophe, able-bodied men, yes, the rest of ye. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the constable. Have you some good stout staves, and pitchforks, apostrophe, staves and pitchforks in the name o' the law, and take 'em in your hands, and go in quest, and do as we in authority tell ye. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thus aroused, the men prepared to give chase. The evidence was, indeed, though circumstantial, so convincing, that but little argument was needed to show the shepherd's guests that after what they had seen it would look very much like connivance if they did not instantly pursue the unhappy third stranger, who could not as yet have gone more than a few hundred yards over such uneven country. A shepherd is always well provided with lanterns. And, lighting these hastily, and with hurdle staves in their hands, they poured out of the door, taking a direction along the crest of the hill, away from the town, the rain having fortunately a little abated. Disturbed by the noise, or possibly by unpleasant dreams of her baptism, the child who had been christened began to cry heartbrokenly in the room overhead. These notes of grief came down through the chinks of the floor to the ears of the women below, who jumped up one by one, and seemed glad of the excuse to ascend, and comfort the baby, for the incidents of the last half hour greatly oppressed them. Thus in the space of 2 or 3 minutes the room on the ground floor was deserted quite. But it was not for long. Hardly had the sound of footsteps died away, when a man returned round the corner of the house from the direction the pursuers had taken. Peeping in at the door, and seeing nobody there, he entered leisurely. It was the stranger of the chimney corner, who had gone out with the rest. The motive of his return was shown by his helping himself to a cut piece of skimmer cake that lay on a ledge beside where he had sat, and which he had apparently forgotten to take with him. He also poured out half a cup more meat from the quantity that remained, ravenously eating and drinking these as he stood. He had not finished when another figure came in just as quietly, his friend in cinder gray. "Oh, you here?" said the latter, smiling. "I thought you had gone to help in the capture." And this speaker also revealed the object of his return, by looking solicitously round for the fascinating mug of old mead. "And I thought you had gone," said the other, continuing his skimmer cake with some effort. "Well, on second thoughts, I felt there were enough without me," said the first confidentially, "on such a night as it is too. Besides, 'tis the business o' the government to take care of its criminals, not mine." "True, so it is. And I felt as you did, that there were enough without me. I don't want to break my limbs running over the humps and hollows of this wild country. Nor I neither, between you and me. These shepherd people are used to it, simple-minded souls, you know, stirred up to anything in a moment. They'll have him ready for me before the morning, and no trouble to me at all. They'll have him, and we shall have saved ourselves all labor in the matter. True. Well, my way is to Casterbridge, and 'tis as much as my legs will do to take me that far. Going the same way? No, I am sorry to say. I have to get home over there," he nodded indefinitely to the right, "and I feel as you do, that it is quite enough for my legs to do before bedtime." The other had by this time finished the meat in the mug, after which, shaking hands heartily at the door, and wishing each other well, they went their several ways. In the meantime the company of pursuers had reached the end of the Hawk's Back elevation which dominated this part of the down. They had decided on no particular plan of action, and, finding that the man of the billful trade was no longer in their company, they seemed quite unable to form any such plan now. They descended in all directions down the hill, and straightway several of the party fell into the snare set by nature for all misguided midnight ramblers over this part of the Cretaceous formation. The Lanchets, or Flint Slopes, which belted the escarpment at intervals of a dozen yards, took the less cautious ones unawares, and losing their footing on the rubbly steep they slid sharply downwards, the lanterns rolling from their hands to the bottom, and there lying on their sides till the horn was scorched through. When they had again gathered themselves together, the shepherd, as the man who knew the country best, took the lead, and guided them round these treacherous inclines. The lanterns, which seemed rather to dazzle their eyes, and warn the fugitive than to assist them in the exploration, were extinguished, due silence was observed, and in this more rational order they plunged into the vale. It was a grassy, briary, moist defile, affording some shelter to any person who had sought it, but the party perambulated it in vain, and ascended on the other side. Here they wandered apart, and after an interval close together again to report progress. At the second time of closing in they found themselves near a lonely ash, the single tree on this part of the coombe, probably sown there by a passing bird some 50 years before. And here, standing a little to one side of the trunk, as motionless as the trunk itself, appeared the man they were in quest of, his outline being well defined against the sky beyond. The man noiselessly drew up and faced him. Your money or your life? ... said the constable sternly to the still figure. No, no, whispered John Pitcher. Tisn't our side ought to say that. That's the doctrine of vagabonds like him, and we be on the side of the law. ... replied the constable impatiently. I must say something, mustn't I? And if you had all the weight of this undertaking upon your mind, perhaps you'd say the wrong thing too. Prisoner at the bar, surrender, in the name of the Father, the Crown, I mean. ... The man under the tree seemed now to notice them for the first time, and, giving them no opportunity whatever for exhibiting their courage, he strolled slowly towards them. He was, indeed, the little man, the third stranger, but his trepidation had in a great measure gone. Well, travelers, he said, did I hear ye speak to me? You did. You've got to come, and be our prisoner at once. ... said the constable. We arrest thee on the charge of not biting in Casterbridge jail in a decent, proper manner, to be hung tomorrow morning. Neighbors, do your duty, and seize the culprit. ... On hearing the charge, the man seemed enlightened, and, saying not another word, resigned himself with preternatural civility to the search party, who, with their staves in their hands, surrounded him on all sides, and marched him back towards the shepherd's cottage. It was 11 o'clock by the time they arrived. The light shining from the open door, a sound of men's voices within, proclaimed to them as they approached the house that some new events had arisen in their absence. On entering, they discovered the shepherd's living room to be invaded by two officers from Casterbridge jail, and a well-known magistrate who lived at the nearest country seat, intelligence of the escape having become generally circulated. Gentlemen, said the constable, I have brought back your man, not without risk and danger, but everyone must do his duty. He is inside this circle of able-bodied persons, who have lent me useful aid, considering their ignorance of crown work. Men, bring forward your prisoner. ... And the third stranger was led to the light. Who is this? ... said one of the officials. The man, said the constable. Certainly not, said the turnkey, and the first corroborated his statement. But how can it be otherwise? ... asked the constable. Or why was he so terrified at sight of the singing instrument of the law who sat there? ... He related the strange behavior of the third stranger on entering the house during the hangman's song. Can't understand it, said the officer coolly. All I know is that it is not the condemned man. He's quite a different character from this one, a gauntish fellow, with dark hair and eyes, rather good looking, and with a musical bass voice that, if you heard it once, you'd never mistake, as long as you lived. Why, souls, 'twas the man in the chimney corner. Hey, what? Said the magistrate, coming forward after inquiring particulars from the shepherd in the background. Haven't you got the man after all? Said the constable, he's the man we were in search of, that's true, and yet he's not the man we were in search of. For the man we were in search of was not the man we wanted, sir, if you understand my everyday way. For it was the man in the chimney corner. A pretty kettle of fish altogether. Said the magistrate. You had better start for the other man at once. The prisoner now spoke for the first time. The mention of the man in the chimney corner seemed to have moved him as nothing else could do. Sir, apostrophe he said, stepping forward to the magistrate, take no more trouble about me. The time has come when I may as well speak. I have done nothing. My crime is that the condemned man is my brother. Early this afternoon I left home at Shottsford, to tramp it all the way to Casterbridge Jail to bid him farewell. I was benighted, and called here to rest and ask the way. When I opened the door I saw before me the very man, my brother, that I thought to see in the condemned cell at Casterbridge. He was in this chimney corner, and jammed close to him, so that he could not have got out, if he had tried, was the executioner who'd come to take his life, singing a song about it, and not knowing that it was his victim who was close by, joining in to save appearances. My brother looked a glance of agony at me, and I knew he meant, don't reveal what you see, my life depends on it. I was so terror-struck that I could hardly stand, and, not knowing what I did, I turned and hurried away. The narrator's manner and tone had the stamp of truth, and his story made a great impression on all around. And do you know where your brother is at the present time? Asked the magistrate. I do not. I have never seen him since I closed this door. I can testify to that, for we've been between he ever since, said the constable. Where does he think to fly to? What is his occupation? He's a watch and clockmaker, sir. A said a was a wheelwright, a wicked rogue, said the constable. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.